Radio.
Good morning and welcome to my show. I'm Annie Braley and my show is called Extraordinary People. Have you ever seen someone on the street as you pass them by or on the bus or in a crowd and thought, I wonder where they're from? What is their story? Maybe because I'm a Canadian, I have always and will never stop being interested in the people of Britain. So I will be talking to ordinary people to find out what makes them interesting and extraordinary. I will be mixing chat with music, and I hope you enjoy the ride. My mystery guest this morning is Anton Matthews. Now, here is someone I hardly know at all, and even with the benefit of his table of bullet points, which he sent to me before the show, I am still very much in the dark about who Anton is and about his life. I do know he has been with 10 Radio for a long time, and he has a music industry background, and every time something goes wrong here in the studio on the electronics side of things, Anton is the guy who sorts these things out. So I will be diving into the great unknown along with my audience this morning, although I think there are lots of people who know a lot about you, Anton. Welcome and good morning.
Good morning to you, Annie. I've just got to pull you up on one little point there.
Okay,
You talk about the fact that anything goes wrong with the desk or electronics, I deal with it. Not quite true now.
Okay.
Well, that's how it used to be.
Right.
I mean, we'll come on to some of that.
But your legend is obviously folklore around here.
Well, that's kind of you. But certainly, I mean, now there's a really, really good team. So, of course, I live a bit away.
You do.
If something goes wrong, I can ring somebody.
Yeah,
up and say,
that's true.
Do this, do that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I just found out recently that you live very close to where I do in Taunton.
Right. We're neighbours. Yeah.
We are indeed.
Good.
So let's get into your life story, Anton.
Sure.
So I can see you started life in Hampstead. So what sticks in your memory from those early years? And was it a happy or not so happy childhood in your view?
Yes, it was. Yes, I have to say that I did have a happy childhood. I was sort of fairly, life was fairly free and easy. I had very loving parents and grandparents. Indeed, my grandparents, I have an image of my grandfather after whom I was named. He was Antonius Everdinus Capitos, would you believe?
My goodness.
Well,
what a wonderful name.
He was an apostolic, what they call a Catholic apostolic priest at Gordon Square in London.
Yes.
And I have this picture of him in the pulpit. That's all I really remember of him, because he died when I was only, four, five, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so one other image of him I have is when I used to stay at the family home in Hampstead, which was a very, very big house, used to, on the top floor. And he would come wake me up in the morning and then walk down the stairs. So I got this picture in my mind of him walking down the stairs, walking down from the pulpit.
Yes, fantastic.
Lovely man.
And was the church somewhere in central London?
Yes. Gordon Square is just off Tottenham Court Road.
Oh, right. Oh, gosh.
It actually became the great thing about the Catholic Chapel Church, or particularly about that particular branch of the church, as it were, was they were mainly very wealthy people. And what had happened was that when they were formed, Edwardian times, the idea was that there were 12 apostolic priests, of which my grandfather was one, and that when the last one of them died, that was going to be the second coming of the Lord.
Which
is an extraordinary thing, really, because it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm,
my grandmother, bless her, she believed it would happen. And I mean, that was long after all 12 of them had gone. But there we are. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's slightly sidetracking. So living in Hampstead, Hampstead was quite artistic. And obviously there was musical flavour in the air, so lots of music on the radio, which we didn't have television in those days, and of course the old wind up gramophone.
You had one of those?
Absolutely. Yes.
Wonderful.
We didn't get you into electronics. Wasn't rarely existent then, you know.
Right, right.
Radios
what
was
kind
about
of, what
the
kind
thing
of music did you
machines.
Listen to on the wind-up gramophone?
Oh, gosh. Well, my parents used to play jazz-type records.
Right,
and,
right.
And
I'm thinking like 20s Charleston.
Yeah,
and,
well, a bit of that, yes, and 30s
right,
stuff
right,
and
right,
so
right.
on.
Wow.
Yes, when they were, well, really, their sort of music
yes,
when they were youngsters,
yes.
you know. So, you know, that was quite fun. There were lots of parties as well. I do remember as a young lad, going with my mum to quite late night, and dad, quite late night parties sometimes. Mm. And some of those, you know, there were famous people. I didn't know they were famous, but one particular one I remember was a chap called Cy Grant. He was kind of an early TV singer and a guitarist with his own show. But lovely parties at his house, you know, just nice atmosphere, which I kind
when
of enjoyed.
When you say his own show... On radio, presumably?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, no, and on television. He did have a television show a little bit later on.
Cy Jones.
And he sang, Cy Grant, his
Cy
name.
Grant.
Yeah, he
Sorry.
Was a West Indian. There was some television show that he used to have a regular singing spot as well.
Yeah,
lovely chap. That was kind of that. And music, so therefore, was around all the time. Artistry, yes, that was around. My mother was a painter, bless her. Musically, she played the piano very, very well, incredibly well, in fact, and she played the piano until she was, you know, in her early 80s. We had the family piano, but that's a whole other story I won't go into now. And then music-wise, I mean, I had started singing anyway because there was always music and stuff, so it was kind of inbuilt almost. I sixth Christmas, I was given a ukulele, which I still got.
You still have it?
Well, it's a bit bashed and battered about. It needs
wonderful.
It needs some attention, shall we say. But my dad taught me how to play that, and my mother played the piano, as I say. I had piano lessons with a lady called Miss Smith, quite an elderly lady. I mean, you know, when I was that age, she was probably 30s, 40s, something like that. But, yeah... So that was really kind of nice.
Artistic but also you know filled with a lot of faith as well. So kind of a combination of artistic but also you know somewhat what religious pious kind
well,
of yes, combination.
It wasn't overly religious. I mean we lived across the road from St John's in Hampstead and I used to sing there.
Pretty much
every week.
Yeah.
You know, a member of the choir. And that's where I kind of picked up and learnt to read music and stuff like that. So
let's move on to the first song. I should explain that very unusually on this program every single song has been chosen by Anton.
Well, this is chosen. It's one of those records that I used to
listen to. Wonderful.
And indeed, I sent a request in to the BBC.
Did
can
you?
We have this played on Children's Choice?
Oh, right. Wonderful. It's a great, great song.
And
so
I
let's
met
listen.
Henry Hall.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So here is Teddy Bear's Picnic, Henry Hall, the BBC Dance Orchestra.
If you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their picnic. Teddy bear who's been good is sure of a treat today. There's lots of marvelous things to eat and wonderful games to play. Beneath the trees where nobody sees, they'll hide and seek as long as they please. That's the way the teddy bears have their picnic. Picnic time for teddy bears. The little teddy bears are having a lovely time today. Watch them, catch them unawares, and see them picnic on their holiday. see them gaily gad about. They love to play and shout, they never have any cares. At 6 o'clock their mummies and daddies will take them home to bed, 'cause they're tired little teddy bears. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better not go alone. It's lovely down in the woods today, but safer to stay at home. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their picnic.
Welcome back. You're listening to Annie Braley talking to Anton Matthews on 10 Radio. If you would like to write in and ask a question of Anton or make a comment at all, please do so by emailing studio@10radio.org or send a text to 07786-2022-40. And please start the text with the word studio, and that way I will readily see it on the screen here in front of me. So, Anton, let's move on to your teenage years. I'm trying to visualize, were you a quiet boy or were you wild? And what would your family say about what you were like at that time?
Well, those are lovely questions to ask. I mean, I don't think I was sort of shy or quiet, but I wasn't a rebel either. I was very lucky. I had, as I said before, quite a bit of freedom. I used to explore. I liked learning. I had a school friend of mine, Geoffrey Douglas Smith, who introduced me to sort of radio and things like that when I was sort of 10 or so. And I also saved up money to buy a bike, because I loved cycling, enjoyed cycling very much, and used to go. I mean, in those days you wouldn't do it nowadays, but in those days as a lad we were right next door to Hampstead Heath, so we lived in a flat. Hampstead Heath was my playground. We used to ride round there, and I loved it. And after the Hampstead Fair had been, I'd go down there and see if I can find any 10 bob notes, 10 shilling notes, which I did once, I think, but used to find a lot of loose change, because people going on the roundabout, would fly out, which was.
And
which
so, as what sort of time period are we talking about? You being a teenager in Hampstead, if you don't mind me asking.
No, of course I don't. No, of course I don't. I mean, I was in Hampstead from 46 when I was born, at the top of Hampstead until.
So we're talking 60s. You were a teenager.
I was a teenager in the 60s. So I kind of missed out in the 60s. I like to think of myself in some ways as more of a 70s person.
I see. That you were just a little bit too young, maybe.
Just a tiny bit too young, yes. Yeah. I mean.
And did you have, like, an older sibling, for example?
I was the eldest.
That's exactly why then, I know, as an older sibling myself, the oldest, I should say, you're kind of the limit of the experience, aren't you?
In a way,
if you had an older sister or brother, they would have dragged you into some of that culture.
Oh, sure.
A little bit older than you.
I had an aunt who I sort of, she was like a sister. She was quite a bit younger than my mother. But they were both very sisterly somehow. They took me under their wing, which was lovely as a youngster. As a teenager, I sort of didn't go, I never went off the rails. Mm-hmm. But yes, that was when I was a young teenager, that was when the ecclesiastical bit came in, because I got a choral scholarship to the Temple Church in London.
Oh, I see.
Which actually my granny had instigated when I was much younger. She used to take me to her singing lessons.
Right.
And we'd sing, you know, songs like Parnis Angelicus and stuff like that as duets. Mm-hmm. I never realised. I realised it much years later. She was kind of grooming me.
She was hothousing you.
Yeah, become a chorister. That was a wonderful time. Whilst I was there, I was, very lucky to be. Again, there's a bit of history here that the first million selling records was done by a boy called Ernest Luff in the 30s. And he was a bass when I was in the Temple Choir. And his son, Robin Luff, who I still know a little bit, he was a contemporary of mine. And at one point, the Temple Church made a record of carol songs. Kind of appropriate at this time of year, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I sang a duet, you know, with Robin Luff. I think it was The Holly and the Ivy, which I heard last night, but that's another story. Yeah, I mean, also then during that time, we moved in the teens when I was, what, must have been 12, 13, something like that. We moved from Hampstead to Putney. So you know, life became quite a bit different. I made some new friends. I was still travelling up by, you know, public transport, the 22 bus from Putney, still runs up to Holborn to go to school. But also during that time, that's again when I got into music a bit. My mother was a member of Putney Art School. And of course, because playing the ukulele, I also played the banjo a bit because my dad did. And he showed me how to do that. But I played in a band called the Ragtime Suwanee Six. and at that time, there was a recording little house where there was a chap who had did recording. And we were only in Putney, which is next door to Barnes. So went there and played my banjo when I was, what was I, must have been 11, something like that, 12. Oh, no, sorry, we'd already moved to Putney. So, yes, I was early teens, 13, 14, whatever.
Right.
And so that was my first experience of recording, never realising that later on I would actually be working as a recording engineer in Barnes.
Fantastic. Well,
that
we will
comes
be
later.
Perfect, perfect segue on to what the next question is going to be. But in the meantime, let's listen to another song of your choice here. And this is Richard Anthony singing Aranjuez, Mon Amour.
Aranjuez.
Aranjuez.
Aranjuez, Mon Amour.
Mon Amour.
Mon amour, sur l'eau des fontaines, mon amour, où le vent les amène, mon amour, le soir tombé, on voit flotter des pétales de rose. Mon amour, et les murs se gercent, mon amour, au soleil, au vent, à la verse et aux années qui vont passant, depuis le matin de mai qu'ils sont venus, et qu'en chantant soudain ils ont écrit sur les murs du bout de leurs fusils de bien étranges choses. Mon amour, sur le mur et enlace, mon amour, leurs noms gravés et chaque été d'un beau rouge sont les roses. Mon amour, sèche les fontaines, mon amour, au soleil, au vent de la plaine et aux années qui vont passant, depuis le matin de mai qu'ils sont venus la fleur au cœur, les pieds nus, le palan et les yeux éclairés d'un étrange sourire.
So I'm fading that out because it is just a little bit on the long side for this morning. So Anton, I'd like to explore your working life in the music industry. I think there are some amazing stories you can tell us, tell me, I should say, about what some well-known musicians and bands that you've had contact with, and how did you get into music? And let's start there.
Okay, fine. I've always had music, you know, as I think I explained before. Just to tie up that last record, mm-hmm. I first heard that when I was in Spain, which I'd gone to in my late teens with some chums from college. And I sat next to Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones in a club in Marbella.
Wow.
Again, not knowing that years later I'd be working with his fellow band members.
Right.
That ties that in. But so, yes, I mean, I've always had music around. And indeed, when I was in the army at the Royal Military Academy, we formed a band.
Mm-hmm.
Reason being that every company, and there were 12 companies, had every term a company dance.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, I mean, a band from London was £200 or £300. We said, right, we'll form our own band. We'll do some of the company dances, which we did, which was, of course, frowned upon. Yes, I mean, you formed a band and that was various fun. But I got kicked out of the army. So there we are. That's another story. After that, various jobs.
In the BBC. Wait. Hang on.
Yeah, go on.
Hang on. You got kicked out of the army.
Yes.
Anton Matthews, who so far sounds like you know, an absolute angel. What happened? Tell us.
Well, it's a silly story, in fact. I siphoned some petrol out of a car because I could see my chum was in trouble.
Okay.
His car wouldn't start.
Right.
It was out of fuel.
Right.
So I didn't think anything about it. Somehow or other, I found a pipe and a milk bottle.
Okay.
I took a pint of petrol out of it, shoved it in somewhere, into his car. Off he went. That was the same car we went to Spain in.
Oh, I see.
Where I met Brian Jones. So it kind of ties in with the story. So I was back here from the army, which was okay. But in fact, that didn't last. And so I was given a reasonably honourable discharge, should we say.
Oh, my goodness.
And then that then led me on to, well, what am I going to do? I had various jobs. Mm-hmm, and I mm-hmm. wrote to and got a job at the BBC as a studio manager. However, I also got kicked out of the BBC.
Oh.
Their golden rule then was, thou shalt not work for any other radio station.
Right.
And I did some tape cutting for a friend of a friend. And I didn't get paid, but I didn't think anything of it. But again, got found out, story of my life.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And
that was it.
And so that was it, yes. But I mean, I went to the BBC and that got me into the recording thing. That's why I wanted to go into recording.
Mm.
And I wrote some letters to, you know, the Yellow Pages was what you would then find the various recording studios. So mm-hmm. I wrote mm-hmm. quite a lot of letters to studios, but got a third of them back that said thanks for your interest, but no thanks. And then I thought, well, I'll phone up. Mm-hmm. And at that mm-hmm. time I was living in Barnes, as it happened. And I phoned up. The third call I made was to Olympic Sound Studios in Barnes. And the woman there, who I still know, dear Anna, great friend, it was she who organised which bands you would work with when you were at Olympic. So I was there for 5 years.
Right.
You know, and it was she that put me to work with on sessions with the Stones, with all the various bands that were there.
Amazing.
Which was pretty extraordinary, yes. And I mean, I'd
And
worked,
you were, did, sorry, just to get it clear in my mind, you were a sound engineer or...?
Yes, I mean, I started as a tape operator,
right,
you know, making the T. So you press a button that says record. Okay. But within 6 months, I was behind the desk at Studio One with Keith Richard trying to play the lick for Brown Sugar.
Fantastic.
One of the many licks. I didn't realise that until I researched it. But I also did, once I was on the desk, I did the first R. White's Lemonade advert.
Oh, gosh.
I did film music.
Yeah.
One particular one I remember was Oh Lucky Man, which had actually all been recorded. But the film was great, and Alan Price was a lovely man.
I saw the film just like about a year ago.
Oh, really?
Really amazing.
great film. But that soundtrack, I did the mix of it with some special effects and stuff like that. I also worked on Jesus Christ Superstar and Evita and so on, and lots of other pop music with the Eagles. I'm a T-boy for the Eagles, but with Slade, I did Ed Desk, I did Hawkwind, the Beatles separately. I met them.
Yeah.
Two of them were working on film music. One of them was Paul McCartney. I had an A session with him, which was a very long session. And the only other Beatle that I'd never actually met, although I saw him on the street in New York in 1975, was John Lennon.
Oh, I see.
5 years before he was sadly killed.
Yeah.
So, that was sort of the first half of my recording experience.
We'll talk more about that in a moment. I imagine that you must have developed an incredible reputation during that time, having worked with all those, you know, high-profile musicians. Let's move on to the next song, and this is another song that you've chosen. This is Tulane, and it's the Steve Gibbons Band.
We'll come on to why we're playing that in a moment.
Okay. Right. I will ask Anton a question in a moment, but in the meantime, we got an email in from Eddie Gaines. How lovely. He says, "Hi, Annie and Anton." He says, "As you know, I'm a big fan of both of you and great to hear about the early times. When I was growing up, Teddy Bear's Picnic, etc. I've just come back from Spain, 3 great weeks of sun and Spanish culture, beginning to understand more about the art of flamenco, Falla, and Lorca, having been in Cadiz, Seville, and Marbella for their marvelous Falla Music Festival." Oh, how nice, Eddie, for you. I would like to do the same someday. That sounds fantastic. So, Anton, let's talk a little bit more about your music career now.
Sure.
So tell me more about the studios and bands you worked with, and maybe even your own personal views on what makes a hit.
Well, that's a very good question. I guess I could sort of cover that one first, because in part, the record we just heard, Tulane, which was produced by American guy, Kenny Laguna. As I now just said before, I was actually on the street in New York with Kenny when we saw John Lennon, which he got very excited about. But there we are. That's mm-hmm. another story. Mm-hmm. But that has got it. It's got an interesting, something that catches your ear when you first hear it. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. got a good story behind it, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in the words. It's melodic. It's yes. got musicality to it.
Yes.
And it's got nice riffs and hooks. And, you know, run on, Julie, do-dee-doo-doo-doo-doo. You know, just you kind of want to sing along with it. And that's what, to me, old-fashioned as I might be, I mean, nowadays I'm sure a hit is something different as long as...
I think it's still the same elements,
it's got
sure.
to have musicality, it's yes. got to have melody, yes. it's got to have a hook
yeah.
that you remember.
Yes.
Now, the Beatles were very clever at that, very clever at that. I used to listen to Beatles songs and think, okay, it's a pop song. But actually, when you listen to them, you know, and nowadays we still sing, she loves you, yeah, yeah, you know, we still know in almost everybody will know with at least one Beatles song.
That's true. That's true.
And their music is still with us. My personal opinion is I don't think there are going to be that many tracks and records that you hear nowadays, rap and stuff like that, that are going to actually be that memorable.
I think a lot of what is out there at the moment is very formulaic.
Exactly.
And flat.
Yes.
And there's just a lot of repetition of even yeah. like beats in the background.
Yeah.
You could literally splice and put behind another song.
Yeah.
So I look forward to just hearing stuff that just somehow breaks through all of this.
Yeah.
And I think that you know, indie labels will be able to do that.
No, you're absolutely right.
And every now
right.
and then something does pop out from nowhere.
Yeah.
And how wonderful.
Yeah, you're right. Yes.
So tell us more about.
Well, my musical career, I mean, it was a long time ago now, you know, but I mean, I do still have happy memories. I left Olympic Sound because The Who, I'd been at the recording of Who's Next album, mm-hmm. And my last track is
yes.
a bit of that.
That's right.
That period of time. And anyway, their manager came to me and said, oh, the boys like you. Would you like to come and work at their new quadraphonic studio in
right.
Battersea? Well, I had actually recently moved from Battersea, from Barnes, and thought, oh, OK, well, that'll be nearer and it'll mm-hmm. be interesting to move mm-hmm. on and do that. So it was what I did. And whilst I was there, I worked with, I did some of the back recording of Quadrophenia. I did some recording with Supertramp before they became famous. Again, story of my life. A lot of the bands I worked with before they became famous.
Right.
So I didn't sort of carry along on the bandwagon. But while I was there at Ramport Studios, The Who's studio, I was working with a couple of guys who I'd met and they had formed with Ginger Baker from Cream a group mm-hmm. who subsequently, I mean, I did several albums, two or three albums with them, say several. mm-hmm. But subsequently they said, oh, we're going out on the road. We're doing a tour of Europe. We want you to come with us as the engineer, road engineer.
Exciting.
And the reason for that was because on the production of the record, I'd done a lot of guitar playing, singing, very high harmonies and stuff
Were
like
you?
That, which I can't do nowadays, sadly. The old voice croaks away, you know. But
so you got so really very involved with some of these productions, didn't you?
In a variety of ways.
That other people might not have been able to.
Well, I don't know about that. And again, I mean, I don't think I got a huge reputation because, of course, what happened after I'd gone out on the road with the Baker Gurwitz Army, which was music before its time in some ways, although some of the records were very overproduced.
Sorry? I'm very curious. I'll look them up and listen.
Yeah. Mm. But, I mean, I worked. So what happened there was, after I'd finished with that band, you know, they sort of split up one thing and another. I went back to United Artists and various other of the record companies and said, oh, well, I'm back, you know, and available for work. They said, oh, who are you?
Oh, gosh.
So that was that. So, in fact, but I was very lucky. I got some freelance jobs and worked with the Man Band, who were really good, Welsh band. And also that track we just heard, I did several albums with Steve Gibbons' band. They were fabulous. And then through other things, I did some work abroad in France with three bands, one of which was a big record. They wanted to record their next album in English. So that was involved me in the production. But I played piano and guitar and bits and pieces like that.
Love
as well.
It.
So
a so
bit of
exciting.
An all-rounder.
And absolutely. Let's move on to your next song choice. And this is Bryan Adams, the Canadian superstar. and this is Run to You. Let's enjoy that.
Thank you. never found out about you and I.
So I have to laugh because just now Anton leaned over and cranked up the lever there for that that guitar
middle break.
That's the word I'm looking for. Very funny. Right, let's move on to your years now. After years in the industry, you decided to make a big change and to live in the countryside, which I assume is when you came to Somerset. So what was that exactly? How's that been going for you?
Well, actually, no, it was London to Hampshire first.
Ah.
Circumstances had made that change for me, and my music career had ended virtually. And so I went back into my first love, which was radio communications.
Right.
I mean, as a boy, I got the Eagle comic, and I knew from Dan Dare that every day, everybody one day would have a piece of plastic in their hand. They could press buttons on it and speak to anybody in the world. I knew that. I could just picture it. But anyway, I got back into singing as well, having done that move. In Hampshire, I sung with a St. John's choir, and in Somerset with In Ecclesia for a number of years. Also, at the end of the 60s, or no, mid-60s, was when I met my third wife, I have to say, who very, very special, and we're still together after many, many years and a few trials and tribulations. But, you know, we're still good friends, and I love that. And she, indeed, is what your next track is all about, because it was our song, if you like, on a honeymoon in Barbados.
Oh, how lovely.
Which we were lucky to have.
Nice. So this is the song we're talking about is Lady in Red by Chris de Burgh.
Seen you looking
shine so lovely as you did tonight. I've never seen you shine so bright. Never seen so many men ask you if you wanted to dance. They're looking for a little romance, given half a chance. I have never seen that dress you're wearing, or the highlights in your hair that catch your eye. I have been blind, lady.
Okay, so Anton, when did you join 10 Radio? And what is it about this interest that keeps you going? And what other hobbies do you have? Anything completely left field and unexpected? I'm digging.
No, that's fine. I think, interestingly enough, having moved London to Hampshire and then Hampshire to Somerset in 2001, we moved down this part of the world. I was still commuting, going up to London, travelling week by week, whereas in Hampshire I used to do it day by day, but by car. When we moved down here, in fact, suddenly life changed a lot in some respects, because initially I was only had to be 3 days up in London. Mm-hmm. So that was good, because I could go midweek, I could be back, I would work at home Mondays, Fridays, I could be back down here, enjoy the weekends. And when our son was born, Samuel, bless him, he arrived originally in 94 when we were in Hampshire, that's right, but he was down here. That was mainly reason we moved down here to some extent, because of his schooling. So that was grand. Mm-hmm. Worked out well. And I first met 10 Radio. I was walking past the Civic Centre up in Whivy, and in the background I could see this chap at a desk, and he was talking on a microphone. And I thought, what's going on there? Went in there, left my card, and said to, now who was it was there? It was dear Mrs. Beale, bless her, the treasurer's wife. And went in there and had a chat with her and said, oh, I'll leave you my card. And so I left a card. Mm-hmm. Might be interested in a bit of my sort of musical background, etc., etc. Anyway, next day I get a call from Eddie. Bless him. We did a programme called Eddie's Tomb, which was really about music which probably ought to be buried. but he decided, and so he decided that he'd have me on that programme. And that was fun. I mean, it was quite cathartic in a way.
Were you a guest on the programme?
Yes, I was. In fact, I didn't do that programme until after it 10 Radio had started full time. Mm-hmm. And again, I was slightly involved in that process, because in my communications career, I often used to go to the radio agency, as it was then, up in London. So I was very familiar with a lot of the people and knew kind of who to speak to about licensing and stuff.
I
was a bit involved in that process of 10 Radio getting a full 5-year license. Mm. And of course, now on the next one, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
So that was what started that going. Then, yes, 2008, the station opened, and I did get involved, and I did a classical music program on Friday afternoons, which is still running, Classical Towers, which was nice. You know, people used to say to me, you know, they'd meet me and I'd say, oh, yes, I'm on Ten Ridge and I do the classic music programme. They'd say, oh, Anton, oh, you know all about classical music. What's that piece that goes la, 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 la? And I'd say, I haven't the foggiest idea.
No, you wouldn't.
Again, the internet being a wonderful thing enabled me to, and I scripted everything that I did pretty
That's
much
so
on that
funny.
Programme. But it made it, because how the BBC do it, makes it sound as though you know about it. You've got
absolutely.
The knowledge.
So let me ask you just quickly before we move on to the next song. Any other hobbies, any other wild...
Really, no, although my hobbies from previous years, mm-hmm. I mean, my love of radio and stuff and becoming a radio amateur, finding Ten Radio kind of got me back into that element. Mm-hmm. The difficulty for me was that I worked in the communications industry, so it was no longer a hobby for me to be a radio amateur.
Right.
But that kind of brought it back, you know, as a hobby. And in fact, then what happened with that was that turned into a small business, Ask Anton. I used to, you know, people from round about, I'd advertise in the local Paris Max, and people from round about ring me up and say, I've got a problem. Very often in those days, and still sometimes, it was actually to do with their connection to the internet.
Right.
Which round here was just dreadful.
Yes, yes.
But
absolutely.
There we are. That's another story.
Okay.
So, of course, then my involvement became that I had moved the studio from the town of Wibliscombe down to where it now is.
Yes, yes.
But somebody else then took over. That was when my team took over, mm-hmm, when the desk was moved.
I see.
Other guys came in to do with it.
Right,
I had very little to do with it, to be honest. And that's what sort of created the team.
Okay.
So there we are.
Thank you. Well, let's move on to your next song. So this is Voces 8 singing Locus Iste by Anton Bruckner.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely heavenly that. Anton, if there's anything you could do again differently from the past, what might that be? Are there a couple of moments you might think of?
Well, you posed this question. I actually haven't really given myself time to think about it.
Okay.
However, I'm sure I can think about it whilst we're live. I don't like having any regrets about things, but mm-hmm. there are things in life that one has regrets about. Often people say to me things like, you know, when they hear about my career in the music business. It was a long time ago. It wasn't my one passion, which was radio communications, which I got involved in. And I don't regret that in any way whatsoever, because I enjoyed my time doing that. And obviously, yes, I enjoyed my time in the music business. But one of the reasons I left the music business was because, and I don't know if it's why I'm pretty deaf at the moment, but was the fact that I used to get dreadful headaches and stuff like that. Mm. Didn't get sleep much. You know, I was in my 20s. And
right,
so,
right.
You know, I'd go into the studio 7 o'clock in the morning and set up for the morning session, which might have been adverts or something, and then the afternoon there'd be film session, and then I'd be down with the band to work at 7 o'clock in the evening. They wouldn't finish till, you know, 3-4 in the morning sometimes, and I'd be up again at 7 o'clock to go into the studio. So it was a bit manic, actually, in some ways. But you know, when you're 20, you don't care. In your 20,
you've got
you
the
just
energy
say, well,
levels
get on
then.
With it and you enjoy it.
Yeah,
and
I think
I don't know. Any other regrets? Well, I mean, yes, obviously there are personal regrets, but shall I say I'm not at liberty to talk about
that. No. I don't know if I'm asking for personal. How about anything in the way of the way you did things that you could now in hindsight have done?
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, I mean, hindsight being a wonderful thing. I guess so. I do sometimes think about some of the records that I was involved in, particularly on the production side. Mm-hmm. And I do think to myself, but the opportunity will never arise now, I'd really like to remix that.
Oh, God.
You know, if I was involved with a record... Right. I mean, right. I have to say, the Baker Gurwitz Army would be one of them, because they, again, you know, fine, they'd finish recording and they'd say, well, it's all done. And then we'd spend quite some time. But of course, in those days as well, you were part of the band. That's with the Baker Gurwitz Army. I became part of the band because I did the buttons and the knobs and controls at the mixing.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to have a fairly good brain to be able to remember things. Nowadays, you can mix, do a first mix, and make the computer remember.
So you had to be a musician along with them.
That's right. I treated the day, I always felt, particularly with them, I was the sixth member of the band.
Yes.
I performed with them at the end of the day. When we were out on the road, I don't think it had ever been done before, probably had, but I used to wear headphones and a microphone because from the stage, I was hearing everything exactly as it was arriving.
Yes.
You know, hundreds of yards away from the stage. So I was able to sing the high harmonies or play rhythm guitar when the solo guitarist, you know, the guitarist went into his solo and it needed a bit of support. So I used to do that sort of thing.
Wonderful.
So that was quite fun. But I don't have any regrets. Yes, I'm sure there are things that I could probably have done better in my life.
Don't we all?
You know, so don't we all? You know, we all think, oh, I could have done a little better, you know. Like one school report, could have done better.
Absolutely. No, I was just wondering if there was any, you know, one particular thing, but I think, yeah, absolutely, just like the way most of us, lots of stuff that we could have done better, but hey-ho.
Yeah.
We, you know, that's okay. That's part of life, too. Let's move on to your last song choice, and this is Won't Get Fooled Again.
Yes, it's only the single version, The Who, who I worked with, as I said before, and the long full length track is just amazing, but this is a little taste of it.
Okay,
Won't
lovely.
Get Fooled Again.
Bye.
right, because we have run out of time. And I just want to say thank you so much, Anton, for agreeing to come into the studio and to give us your life story. It's been a journey of discovery, and I've enjoyed our chat very, very much. And thank you also for the song choices. It's been great.
Thank you very much, Annie. I've been really enjoyed it.
Yeah, good.
Really enjoyed
Excellent.
It.
Thank you so much. I feel like I've been in a very esteemed company this morning. I really do. It's wonderful.
Steaming, maybe, but not esteemed.
Thank you for listening to 10 Radio and Extraordinary People, hosted by me, Annie Braley, and I hope you've got me tuned in two Saturdays from now, which is going to be the 23rd of December, at the same time, 10:30 to 11:30, and I will be doing a Christmas special with our very own Barry Summers. 10 Radio and Wivaliscum, treasure that he is. Ciao, babies.